Hello and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. My guest for today is Anas Al-Kassas, founder and CEO of InnoViews, a Houston-based company that has developed a process to retrofit commercial buildings with energy-efficient window treatments. Anas joins the show today to discuss how he's scaling and expanding the company, both to provide his customers with an easy-to-install energy efficiency tool, as well as to move the needle on the energy transition within the built environment. Anas, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Natalie.
I'm really excited to get to talk to you and learn all of the things about InnoViews. But just to start, let's go over a little bit of your background. You're an architect by trade. So how did your career lead you into this world of entrepreneurship?
So, you know, as an architect, we typically work on, projects, and every project is more like a problem on its own that you need to address several challenges and really help solve specific unique problems in that in one project. But if you look at entrepreneurs, they're, you know, a lot of times they create solutions for a much bigger problem that is scalable. At the same time, architects are very creative at solving problems. So for me, I wanted to make a major impact in the built environment beyond just a single project at a time, and specifically when it comes to climate change and the environment. So with my background in architecture and facade engineering, one area that was interesting to me is building envelopes, and especially when I learned that, you know, windows account for up to 40% of the energy loss in buildings. So I started on an idea, tried to make sure that, you know, technically it's feasible. And from there, you know, I was doing my master's degree in Boston, and it turned out to be, you know, they have a sort of an entrepreneurship program. I applied to it, got selected, and then from there started working on turning it into more of a business idea. Quit my job in Boston after a year working on it part time, and then moved to Houston, started the company here. Did my master's thesis on it while, you know, in Houston, and got it to a point where it was, you know, the technology or the system that I developed was kind of fabricatable or can be fabricated, and then went out to raise some angel funding to get the first prototype fabricated, tested, and from there, you know, start going on, you know, as a business, and from prototypes to pilots to projects and more funding and more progress.
Yeah, I love that connection of like problem solving, because of course entrepreneurs are solving a problem, but you know, to find out that architects are solving problems just on a smaller scale, that makes a lot of sense that this kind of was a natural progression for you. So tell me about InnoViews specifically, and I don't know how detailed you want to go into us non-architecture type listeners, but how does it work that it is improving efficiency and not wasting that energy within buildings?
Yeah, sure. I mean, simply, if you look at buildings today, they're the largest energy consuming sector. They're more than industry, more than transportation. They account for up to 40% of the total energy consumption and carbon emissions. So one of the key components in buildings that, you know, attributes to this energy loss is the facade or building envelope, specifically windows and glass. And there's been, you know, over the past 30, 40 years, a construction boom where buildings were built, but without consideration for energy efficiency. So you have, you know, cost was the main driver. And a lot of buildings today ended up with, you know, energy inefficient windows. A lot of people know the difference between like a single pane window and a double pane window that has like two layers of glass with an air gap in between for more insulation. So today there is about 70% of all existing buildings have energy inefficient windows ready to be retrofitted, upgraded to the latest technologies. But the problem is that if you are to upgrade them, they need to replace those, you know, glass facades and window systems. And that's extremely expensive because of the complex and, you know, labor intensive process, and it's very disruptive to the operations and the occupants of the building. You have to vacate the spaces, and that results in loss of income and revenue for the building owner. So a lot of times what happens is that building owners don't really address the building envelope, and unless it's, you know, it needs to be replaced because it can't be fixed, you know, it's beyond repair. So a lot of cities now that have committed to 80% CO2 reduction targets by 2050 or earlier, they're now targeting buildings with energy efficiency standards, capping fossil fuel consumption, and mandating retrofits in certain areas. And these retrofits that are mandated not only for like the heating cooling systems, but windows is a major component. So interviews looked at this problem, you know, and we kind of realized that in order for buildings to implement window upgrades, they need to be, you know, super cost effective. So financially feasible, you know, super fast payback period, positive ROIs. The project needs to be generating payback within the lifetime of the upgrade. And at the same time, whatever the solution that is implemented should not be disruptive. So it can't, it should be implemented while, you know, occupants and businesses are, you know, continuing their normal schedule without disruption. So if you look at that, we determined that really retrofit as a concept is way much better than replacement. It's inherently better as an idea. So the challenge was how to come up with a technology that you can enables this kind of retrofit approach without the disruption and really scalable and cost effective. So that's the sort of core concept of what we're developing. So the idea is that our main technology that was developed enables the integration of some of the advanced glass, energy efficient glass, smart glass technologies into existing buildings. You're adding another layer on top of the facade, on top of the windows. It's a glass layer with a insulating gap between the existing window and the newly added glass. So we turn single pane windows into double pane or double pane into triple pane, whether it's a window, whether it's a glass facade, can be done from the exterior without having to go into the inside interior spaces, and can be done without having to remove, replace, drill, alter any existing building components. So non-disruptive, cost-effective, because it basically utilizes the existing window system as part of the solution instead of throwing them away. So our technology utilizes 70% fewer materials than a full window replacement. It's prefabricated offsite, cuts installation costs by up to 80%. And it's non-invasive, so you could be sleeping behind the window, be outside upgrading the entire facade without any disruption. So these three key points enable this solution to be, you know, financially attractive from the perspective of building owners to adopt now. And that would increase the rate of window upgrades, will help cities achieve their energy efficiency targets. So that's kind of the overview of how our technology works and, you know, basically what we do.
I think it's both very like much common sense and also incredibly complicated, because like everything you outlined, like so much, you had to think through so much of the process and like the needs of the building owner and builder. But at the same time, it's like, well, duh, we're adding insulation. You know what I mean? So I think it's such an interesting concept. So what feedback do you get from people you talk with about this process and then both when you're just explaining it to them for the first time, and then also when they actually see it in execution?
Well, at the beginning, people don't believe that this can be done. I mean, as you said, it's simple that, hey, we're just adding another layer on top of the existing windows. We're not replacing them. But they keep thinking, oh, what are you replacing? Are you replacing just the glass? Are you replacing this? And tell them, no, we're not replacing anything. We're just adding on top. And we're able to do that without, you know, mechanical fasteners, without drilling through the building or, you know, any kind of invasive procedures. So we had to really do demonstrations and pilot projects and really shoot videos and show it to people so that they really see it in action, adopted and installed, for them to really, you know, see that it's done. It's tested, validated, works. So that was really a big point. Especially also for investors, you know, they can, you know, this cannot be done, or, you know, there was a lot of hesitation at the beginning. Now it's, you know, when they see the payback and the financial metrics in comparison with the traditional solution of full replacement, It's like a surprise to them that, is this really real? Can this be done? And this is unprecedented in the industry. You know, when you're looking at FSR replacement project, it's like over 100 years payback. With our solution, we're achieving under 5 years payback. It's just incredible. So great feedback. Obviously, with any new technology that is hardware, not software, you're trying to bring to a kind of a risk-averse market, which is the real estate market. No one wants to be the first one. So every market we go to, we look for the innovators, the early adopters who would say, we're willing to be the first one. So market penetration takes a little bit longer than, you know, with some software solutions, for example. But it's really the right time given the support that we're getting from every stakeholder. You know, you're looking at utilities now offering significant incentives. You look at the Inflation Reduction Act with the tax deductions that are being available now for energy retrofits. Some buildings are getting up to $1 million in incentives just to be able to achieve that and do that. So it's the right time for energy efficiency retrofits at this point.
I think, and maybe this is just, you know, my completely outside view, but I feel like for years we've heard about like new builds versus old builds, like older buildings, older homes, like in the residential real estate space. It's been a conversation. In your opinion, has it been slower to translate that future thinking conversation into this commercial space, or has it been happening for a while? Just no one's been able to kind of figure out how to do it, in the best way.
Well, so for it's more challenging for commercial buildings in general to implement new technologies. But I mean, if you look at the building stock today, so in the U.S., you're looking at new construction. It's about 2.5% a year of the entire building stock, and 98% or 97% is just existing buildings. So the and if you look at in 2040, the estimate is that two-thirds of the buildings today will be buildings that, you know, two-thirds of the buildings today will exist in 2040. So if you are to achieve any sort of sustainability targets or carbon reduction or neutrality, you'll have to address that 97% of the building stock. Construction, I mean, as an architect, the focus for in the past 10, 20 years have been mainly on new construction, but over the past, you know, several years, it's been shifting towards existing buildings. And you know, people in the industry are realizing more and more that, you know, the impact is there. New construction, they have new building codes, and it's easy to adopt a higher performing standard. When it comes to existing buildings, it's much more challenging because you're dealing with existing systems that are over 20 years old. So how would you implement new technology? So there's a lot of limitations. And but at the same time, it opens up the field for creativity and innovation. So with at the same time, you know, if you look at the residential market versus the commercial market, from our perspective as a startup company, it's much easier to start with the commercial market because it's less fragmented. You know, when you go to the residential market from a startup company, it requires a lot of resources to really go talk to all building owners. There's not like or house owners, you know, there's not like a single entity that, you know, have the power to implement technologies across, you know, a large amount of houses. So in commercial buildings, you have owners that own a big portfolio, and a single building would make a huge impact if you were to retrofit them, you know, like a 30 story building. So
The opportunity for impact for sure is definitely different. So something you mentioned earlier was about raising money to really be able to grow and scale up. So how have you, so last year, earlier this year, not last year yet, earlier this year you raised seed funding. How have you deployed that $2.75 million in investment that you received to grow and scale over the past almost 12 months now?
yeah, I mean, so that was closed last year, late last year, announced early this year. It was our first equity financing round. So it was mainly used to expand the team. So as a company, I wanted to build the business around sort of a fabless capital efficient model where we don't need to raise tens of millions to be able to bring the technology to market. And the idea is to, instead of building, facilities or from scratch and, buying equipment and all that, we wanted to build it in a way that we can rely on the resources and capabilities of local partners. So we partnered with a really great manufacturing company here in Houston, and at the same time we started building a network of local qualified installation companies. So this way, we were able within a year or so to do projects in, all the way from the East Coast to the West Coast at the same time, without having to, have our own crew or have our own, equipment and facilities and all of that. If we were to do it the other way, it would have been, either impossible within this time frame, or we would have needed, like 50 million plus. So, and at the same time, when COVID hit, that allowed us to be resilient. We didn't have to, lay off people or make job cuts or anything like that, because we were, every person in the team was playing a key role. So that was very helpful to bring the technology to market. And for us, this round of funding was mainly focused on market penetration, expanding our outreach, go-to-market strategy, experiment with some of the strategies that we were thinking about, assumptions regarding the best markets. So a lot of times you go to certain areas, they have very low energy rates and no incentives offered. So sometimes it'll be a difficult sell to do energy retrofits. So we tried to understand, where in the US as a first market we should go and focus on, which type of buildings. So all of that, was the main focus of this round. And I mean, successfully we were able to do, now implement our technology in over 4 million square feet of buildings, from Boston, Seattle, Los Angeles, New York City, Portland, Oregon, Minnesota, and very soon in Canada.
Wow, congratulations. What a busy year.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I know you mentioned not seeking out a huge round, and rather just working smarter, not harder, I guess. So do you have plans for additional funding rounds to raise to continue this growth?
Yes, you're right. So for us as a business, we project that we'll reach profitability within a year or two, but at the same time, we're looking to potentially raise a Series A early next year, 5 to 10 million to accelerate growth, expand the team, and increase our capabilities to be able to deliver some of the really large projects that are currently in our pipeline. So that is something we're planning for Q1 next year. We haven't announced it yet. We're kind of just working on it internally now. Started having some discussions with some VCs that were aware of our progress, and we've been having discussions with them. But yeah, mainly to scale up the team so we can execute. We'll probably continue with the same model that we have of a fabless capital efficient business model.
Yeah, so you mentioned very strategically looking at where you will expand and look for buildings and companies to work with, which makes a lot of sense, like looking for places that offer those incentives. So I wondered, how does Houston fare amongst those markets that you're considering? What's it like to be based here? Do you have pros and cons for, being a company? I think Houston is such a unique place because we do have a lot of construction and we do have a lot of buildings. And we also have, the energy industry and are hoping to lead part of this energy transition. So I just wonder, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Look, Houston, it's a great place, I believe, for a startup, early stage startup to start here and have their operations, especially if it's in the hardware space. So, you can consider it centrally located between, East Coast, West Coast. Labor costs here is very favorable, and at the same time, you have access to some of the, leading manufacturing capabilities here in the city. The energy transition movement here is also very good from our from our side. For energy efficiency is not purely an energy transition, but it really helps because if you're looking to transition to electric, especially for buildings with the huge amount of consumption that is attributed to this sector, you can't just keep the demand at the same level. You need to manage that demand and make buildings more energy efficient. Otherwise, the consumption will be a huge burden on the grid. So, energy efficiency goes hand in hand with energy transition. And for us, at the same time, if you look at starting, so I was in Boston, for example, when I started started working on the idea, but it was more cost effective to move to Houston here and work on it and establish the company. And still, right now, unfortunately, most of our customers are not in Texas. It's mainly in the Northeast West Coast, but the fabrication, production, back-end engineering, everything's here. If you look at Houston, so over the past couple of years, they started looking at the built environment. They adopted the carbon target of, I think, getting to neutrality or 80% reduction by 2050. So that's a great move. They're not as progressive as it comes to some other areas. I think there's a lot of work could be done here to incentivize building owners. As you said, there's a lot of existing buildings and office buildings and construction happening here. But there needs to be some incentives offered to building owners because you have a little bit more attractive energy prices, lower than other areas, other parts of the country. So in order to make it attractive and have achieved those kind of a fewer years payback on energy efficiency retrofits, incentives by utilities will go a long way. So I hope that this could be considered at some point here in Houston, because that will drive more energy efficiency improvements in the existing building stock.
Yeah, I think a lot of my conversations that I have with entrepreneurs and investors within the energy transition space, I think it's becoming more and more clear how it's an all hands on deck approach. And it's not just one aspect of the energy industry making changes to move the needle, but it's outside of the energy industry. It's other industries that need to play a role as well. So what do you see? I guess the greater construction, the greater built environment role in the energy transition. I mean, big picture, what do you see that needs to happen to play a bigger role in that energy transition process?
Well, to start with, the big thing that needs to be achieved is cutting energy consumption of existing buildings by about 20 to 30%. So buildings needs to become up to 40% more energy efficient to be able to enable the transition or to get to 80% reduction in carbon emissions. So that's been a major goal for many cities and have been recognized as one of the key aspects to be that needs to be considered when it comes to these kind of long-term targets. Now, when you look at that, again, this could not happen with just a single solution. It takes a big effort from all kind of stakeholders in the industry, from utilities, from the government, from private sector, and also from new companies and startup companies and entrepreneurs. So, I believe that's the key role that needs to be considered here when it comes to the energy transition, reducing the demand so that it makes it possible for the grid to transition to, clean energy sources. That's really what I believe in.
Yeah, I just think it's so interesting that you've developed a solution that I think even people who don't think about the energy transition and the future of energy on a daily basis can see the like financial and the importance of, but you choose to like connect those dots between energy and efficiency and the energy transition when you founded this company. So I think that's a very interesting approach. I don't know if that was always on your mind to do, or if it became this.
Not really. I mean, it's interesting. The more we talk to building owners, and we get to evaluate certain projects, we learn a lot. So, you know, internally, we do energy analysis of building performance. Every time we get a building, we build an energy model and try to look at where the energy is being consumed and, you know, how much waste is there and what kind of impact the building envelope will achieve. And a lot of times we get projects where the building owners are working with energy consultants trying to transition to fully electric, you know, turning their mechanical systems, HVAC systems, or considering it at least. And it's interesting. They would be looking at sometimes, a building that have been done some retrofits in the past few years. Some of them already incorporated like window films on the building facade. But when they analyze the demand and the peak loads, they see that the building envelope still needs to be addressed, and the demand from the building out needs to be reduced dramatically in order to make it feasible to transition, turn the mechanical systems into electric, and make it, you know, not super expensive to do that with the current peak loads and demands. So, so we analyze all of these, and you look at the differences. It's really eye-opening to see the impact and see the reduction in peak loads and how that makes it feasible to transition or to make a building transition from, you know, natural gas for heating to electric for heating and cooling. So that was very interesting as we go through several projects. And that's not only, you know, in one part of the country, it's all over, you know, Houston, California, New York, everywhere.
So just to wrap up, I know recently Boardroom Media listed you as a top 25 CEO in green building. And I want to know what you think makes you different as a leader. I mean, clearly you know what you're doing with InnoViews, but you're also being recognized as a top CEO. So what makes you stand out as a leader, and how could other startup founders and CEOs in this space, what advice would you have for them?
Well, I was, you know, surprised to see that and feel very fortunate for that recognition. I mean, if you look at my background, it's not like I'm an ex-founder or this is really my first company. I'm an architect, not a businessman, but I still have a lot to learn. And, you know, for someone, a foreigner coming to the country, it's a new culture, new language, everything. It's not easy to start a business. So if you ask me, probably I would attribute it to to how the company is trying to really make an impact. If you ask me, having this mentality of trying to bring in technology to market, regardless of how much you're raising in terms of funding, or are you able to raise funding or not, and do you need to raise a lot of money or not? So a lot of startup founders, sometimes I see that they focus about fundraising mainly, and that's sort of like the key milestones for them, or they consider it a success on its own. It's really not. It's at the end of the day, you need to make a solution that is and bring it to market so that you're making an impact. So it was challenging at the beginning to raise funding. So I, you know, that was the kind of only solution to make it work and not quit. Basically, try to take very small chunks of funding from innovators, angel investors, and try to create sort of a milestone-based funding plan to bring it to market with a very small amount of money. Maybe I would think that's probably the reason. But still, as a CEO, there's a lot of things to learn about and in leading a company, managing a business.
I think that's a theme. I've not covered startups in other cities, but I'm just very impressed with how the startup founders in Houston approach funding. Because like you said, I feel like on the coast, it's, well, how much did you raise? That's like your value as a company. Whereas Houston is like, well, what's like the minimum I can raise to accomplish my goals? That's just a different way of thinking versus like Silicon Valley and such. So I think that's, you're in the right place. I think you're surrounded by people who feel similarly, I think for the most part here in Houston, that it's not, your company's value is not determined by VCs.
Yeah, and you see it right now in the current, you know, financial conditions. Unfortunately, a lot of valuations, a lot of startups have had either a down round or their valuations cut, and then they have to you know, go back and reevaluate, reassess. Growth was the main target, and not profitability, and not, you know, looking at the business to make it successful as a business on its own without the need for outside money. But now in the current situation, you see that now people are looking back and seeing, okay, well, that needs to be the metric when looking, evaluating businesses and startup companies. So it's interesting to see. And like, as you said, in Houston, that's a different approach than, for example, in Silicon Valley. So,
Yeah, I do think in Houston it's driven by the fact that there's not that much venture capital activity than comparatively to these other major cities. So we've had to be scrappy over the years, and now more money's coming in, but it's still that scrappy mentality. I love to see it as a Houstonian. I think it's great to see that happening. But well, this was really exciting for me to get to hear the interview story and see what you're doing. Seems like it's going to be an exciting 2023, as it was an exciting 2022 for you as well. So thank you for coming on and sharing your story.
thank you, Natalie. Thank you for this opportunity. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss next week's edition, and check out innovationmap.com for the latest Houston startup and innovation news.